Everybody, welcome to February's SQL Unplugged show. I'm Scott, you know Rohan. Let's get this started. Rohan, how are you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Scott. How are you?
Good. So, you and I were talking before. We got a lot of stuff to cover and some questions from the previous show that we didn't get to. But let's kick off with a topic that is actually pretty hot, which is SQL vNext, because that's just, we recently released CTP 1.3, and there's just a ton of excitement and movement around that. One of the things you we just released or mentioned in 1.3 was HA, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the big, as you know, always on is a huge, huge feature in SQL Server, for setting up, availability, when you want to read scale out and things like that. And it has a very strong dependency on, Windows failover clustering. So it was an interesting discussion when we started off, on the Linux work, which is like, how would we go make this work? Because of the crazy, and not have doing a SQL Server release without always on support just seemed pretty odd.
Well, that's one of the big features of
Correct. I mean, from an availability standpoint, that's really the marquee feature that we have. Right. I mean, there are other stuff around, historically people have used things like lock shipping and all to do, but more and more for more of the advanced scenarios, always on is really a marquee feature. So that's one of the things that's come out. And actually, the most, we've bet on the support that we have with various Linux distributions around things like Pacemaker. We've sort of deeply integrated with that to support always on availability groups. And the cool thing is, it's not just Windows to Windows. You can basically have a mixed mode setup where you can have a primary running on Windows and the secondary is running on Linux.
Really?
Yeah, and this is something that the customers have asked for, right? Which is and the choice and the flexibility that you get where you're not constrained by saying, if I pick one version of the OS to run SQL Server, then I'm sort of committed to that. And so that flexibility is going to be huge. And when you sort of think about the entire scenario, right, where you have we have customers today that basically, replicate their data using Always On to VMs in Azure as well. So you can imagine, where you have your primary running on Windows, your secondary running on Linux, vice versa.
Yeah.
That's a synchronous replication scenario. And then you have another secondary running in Azure virtual machines. And, we're working on how, to make that work with Azure SQL DB as well. I mean, that's actually really, really flexible. I mean, amazing choice for the customer. So that's the big one that's come out.
Was it a surprise to you? Because we'll have Tobias and Slava on, the Data Exposed show, and we'll talk about it. And they're like, we didn't realize how easy this would be. Was it sort of a surprise as you getting into this? You're like, we thought the fight or the challenge would be a little harder.
Yeah. You mean to just support HA or just all up Linux?
HA, but all up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, of course, Slava, Tobias, and team, they've worked really hard and, gotten us to where they are. There's some very interesting architectural choices that we made early on. I mean, we've spoken extensively about the SQL PAL and, how that's becoming a very, fundamental part of the SQL engine itself. And, once those things settled, then a lot of the functionality just opened up.
Yeah, falls into place.
Right, falls into place. Now, HA, of course, was a little tricky, right? Just given, like the dependency that we had around Windows failover clustering. So the team had to think through that and they worked, I think they've come up with very creative solutions to make, let's say, readable secondaries work, having availability groups, across machines and things like that. So all up, I think it's shaping up very well.
Yep.
I know the team is very squarely focused on, I mean, not just the quality part, which we, just as a part of regular SQL release, you go ahead and do that, but it's focus on performance and scale on Linux, because that's something that out of the gate we want to, just quash any concerns that people have around, hey, is this the first class thing or not?
Yeah, because as you talk to them and they show kind of what they've been doing, how they focus on this, and you can tell very quickly that their focus is, we want this release to be just as good or better than on Windows, right?
Correct.
And how they do that, it's just awesome. So following up on that, we talked about one of the other things, clustered column store and vNext, and the support from a performance standpoint. We talked to Slav and Tobias and the team, they're like, performance and, just run faster. But then we talk about the support for lobs and things like that.
Correct, yeah. So, obviously, moving on to Linux is the huge thing for vNext.
Yep.
And that's what gets talked about. But it has a lot of very cool features that are coming in.
Yeah.
One is, there's a couple of interesting things. Now you have JSON types that can be supported inside CCI, Cluster Column Store Index. You have lobs that can be supported. I mean, that's a really, really big deal. And I think there's, you know, Yuan, one of the engineers, sort of published a blog recently where he sort of has shown like almost 25x compression, you know, gains that we got sort of by, you know, performance gains and things like that by storing the JSON data inside CCI. So stuff like that, I think there's, and then there's Graphwork, you know, we're sort of running that in preview stage and, you know, the graph support inside SQL, we sort of, we released that in preview.
Yep.
Inside Azure SQL database. It's an early attempt, and I think the response has actually been pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You have like, you know, customers have tried that out and like want more and more and more.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that's an interesting area. Adaptive query processing is something that we've spoken about, which is actually very, very unique, a very interesting pivot on, you know, on the query processing thing that we have inside SQL, which hasn't really changed for a very long time. I mean, you know, obviously we did the cardinality estimate stuff. And we're improving on that. But this whole notion of while a long query is executing, having that interleaved execution that gives you the flexibility to change the plan or change the decisions that get made based on what the system learns, I think that's going to be huge, especially for long-running queries and, you know, for DW and things like that.
What are we learning from, or, you know, because I think I ask this every time, but it's every time we talk, there's like this new awesome stuff that, you know, we talk about. And
right.
What's the excitement we hear from, you know, from vNext, you know, overall, because, you know, now HA on Linux and now, you know, CCI, you know, is there like, you know, is this just driving the excitement for vNext?
Yeah, so Linux, of course, is the big,
a big
one.
Deal,
I think
yeah.
Linux, like, I mean, that. And then all the work also that we've been doing around our client drivers. I think very recently we released, you know, like, you know, the JDBC, the ODBC driver for Mac. So the ODBC driver Mac, it's in beta. We sort of, you know, working with customers. That's going to be the basis of actually having, you know, SQL CMD and the BCP stuff running natively on Mac. You know, they all run natively on Linux and Windows today. But, you know, we have had the developer community come and say, look, we use the MacBooks. And so that's, the ODBC driver is going to be the basis for that. And so the work inside client drivers, you know, we've open sourced a bunch of stuff. You know, JDBC got open source, we spoke about that. I think there's a lot of interest in the developer community. I mean, the DB engines ranking, I think we've spoken about that as well, right?
Which is this bringing like a whole new group of people going, finally, right? And, you know, now I can start going, you know, from the open source and...
Yeah, it is attractive, right? I mean, without naming, like, we have one of the top hosters in the world for open source, which really never looked at Microsoft in the past. They've basically approached us and saying, you know, look, SQL Server on Linux, there are lots of questions being asked about the support for that in their environment. And they're like, look, we want to work with you guys to enable this. And for us, it was like, wow. And even internally from our downloads that we see, it's actually been very phenomenal. Like SQL Server 2016, which was one of the largest, you know, like the biggest release of SQL Server we've ever done. In totality, we had maybe about 220,000 CTP downloads across all the releases, CTP releases that we did.
Oh my gosh.
Right? And that itself was huge relative to what we'd seen in the past. With SQL Server vNext, CTP1, that has more than 300,000 downloads already.
Holy cow.
Right? Oh, so, I mean, that sort of gives you the sense of...
So thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And you know, and that's the excitement, right? Which is we've suddenly clearly opened it up to a much broader set of the developer audience that wasn't looking at SQL. You know, so that's definitely one. But yeah, I think there is definitely a ton of excitement. Just excitement in general about, you know, having a great database available on your platform.
And the fact, I love the fact that you know, it's, you know, the Windows and Linux, you know, together. That's kind of opens up a, you know,
whole set of things.
So if you got questions, feel free to ask questions. We're going to actually address some that we got from last month. So one was, will there be more investment in the data quality space?
So there is, you know, from a investment standpoint, there's, you know, obviously things that we sort of look at it. And it's not just a SQL Server on-prem thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's from a data, all up data integration investments, if you take a look at what we have in the cloud with ADF and a bunch of tooling that's being built around it for things like data wrangling. Yes, they are investments. I mean, some of them we've publicly spoken about. Some of them are, you know, more, you know, still like projects that are still being worked on. So yes, there is investments, but a lot of that is, you know, focused on our, you know, on our cloud properties. Because, I mean, I do feel, and this has been the strategy all along with SQL, where we have some basic support for on-prem, but we partner very closely with, you know, other companies. This is where the partner ecosystem play becomes really strong.
And that's an interesting answer, because do we need, are we now asking, and I'm not quite, how do we ask this, how do I say this? Are we now asking to kind of a paradigm shift to say, we need to stop thinking, and hopefully this isn't a dangerous statement, but we need to really stop thinking about box only and start to things like this. How do we do this in a more...
Correct. I mean,
global, right? Because we may not just do it in box, but here's a solution: is we should think about our technologies and services all up. Where we may be able to implement.
I think it's absolutely the right question, Scott, to ask, because, you know, from a focus and strategy standpoint, one of the big things that we're trying to solve is migration of, you know, applications to the cloud. I mean, there are customers, and this is one of the things that we talk about, right? Broadly speaking, there's two buckets. There's the optimized IT bucket, where almost every CIO right now is looking at how do I save money. So there is, you know, by moving a lot of my
cost and performance, correct. Right? And cost is
pretty high. So they don't want to invest a lot in, you know, rewriting their apps. In many cases, they can't to do the migration. But they love the fact that, you know, when the databases are in the cloud, these are their tier 3, tier 4, tier 5 applications, which has always been a problem for the CIOs, right? The databases are spread across machines, the best practices are not applied, security patching is not there. So they're looking at the cloud to save on a lot of those manageability costs, which is, I just move these databases. But the cost of that has to be really low. And this is why, you know, data integration from on-prem to cloud, these are becoming very real issues that, you know, customers are coming and saying, hey, we don't have good solutions today.
Yeah.
And this is where it's not that their best practices already, because some of this stuff is so new.
Yeah.
And so that's why we are very squarely focused to make that experience very easy.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, you look at things like these new tools that were coming, like the data migration assistants that do the all-up analysis, right? From if I'm coming from 2008 or 2012 and I need to want to go to the cloud, you know, what does it mean for me? What's kind of what work do I have to do to
correct.
Do that?
And that's a great example of, you know, once I've made the decision saying yes, cloud's going to really help me, then there's questions around what tooling do we have.
Yeah.
To make sure my databases get analyzed, my applications get analyzed, and like best practices are spewed out in terms of what needs to get done.
But I think the point, you know, from this conversation is that if we're asking questions like that, then before we even ask the question, we could go, hey, there's these other investments we're making that can actually answer my question.
Correct.
Right?
Correct. So and having that broad view absolutely
helps.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. All right. And then the next one, when will we see a almost follows up to that, right? When will we see a non-relational DocDB style feature in SQL Server standalone, right? Kind of the same, almost, you know, hey, why don't you look to, right?
Yeah, no, it's a good look. I think, you know, the fact our play with getting JSON support in, because there's a lot of mobile apps that sort of use, you know, database backends or more in the cloud and on-prem that rely on the JSON via format. So we did the initial investment, and you'll see, you know, us improving that over time. There's always an interesting question in terms of, you know, like, you know, how much of those, you know, what's considered the NoSQL features that you basically sort of make that enable in SQL. This is something that we are actively thinking about because it's interesting. Even with, you know, I've been having discussions with some of the analysts, and they ask the same questions: hey, do you see, you know, how do you see this play out in the long run? And it's always it's hard to sort of answer that question right away, because, you know, there's always certain constraints that you have, but it's something that we're active. There's nothing sort of other than the work that we've done with JSON to speak about right now.
Yeah.
But yes, there's
from a priority perspective too. We have to look
correct.
At it, right?
Yeah, and I think there is an interesting element here which is where you could have multiple stores. But when it comes to analyzing data from that, you know, do you have a central location like SQL Data Warehouse as an example, right? In the cloud or SQL Server, could that become the place where ultimately your analytics and BI and those things happen, irrespective of where the data comes in? That's a strategy versus, you know, do I try to unify SQL to be an all-up store for everything? And that's a harder problem.
Well, and that goes back to our earlier comment. We need to stop thinking about SQL only, right? There's other things that, you know, as we, you know, we're not abandoning SQL Server, but we need to start thinking about how we complement with all these other services.
Correct. And in the cloud, with all humility, I could say DocDB is probably the best NoSQL store that exists in the world today.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And talking about, so you and I were talking earlier, so we're doing this webinar with some ISVs, and one of the big things was security, and we were talking earlier about threat detection, right? Did it just, what announcements do we have there?
Yeah, so the big one at RSA in February, we announced we're going to make, you know, the threat detection feature in Azure SQL Database.
Yep.
That's available in public preview today. We're going to make that generally available in April.
Cool.
I think we've got, it's always, features like this are very interesting because if, the value is clear, but if you do a, if you show a lot of false positives, then the impact reduces. Like if you send me a million emails and one of them happens to be real, then I'm not going to look at it,
right?
Because if the rest of the stuff is noise. So the team actually has done a great job in like really fine tuning the algorithms, leveraging, the various signals that we get. And it's a broader part of the whole Azure security strategy, right?
And I was just going to ask that from a, if I move into the cloud, this has got to be one of those things
absolutely.
Where, right, almost top of the list.
Right. You know, one of the things, if you look at on-prem, basically people just cut off any access to machines that host databases.
Right.
Like literally no network, right?
Yeah.
Other than internal facing, where mid-tier apps connect.
Right.
And the reason for that is they host some of the most valuable customer data, right? Or the data that's high value for the customers. And when you move to the cloud, there's always this concern, which is, well, everything is somehow connected, And of course, there's stuff around like, VNets and things like that that we're working on. But having that confidence that, hey, if your database is ever under attack, we'll be able to detect that is pretty huge. And
okay.
So that's going to be generally available. There's been a lot of very positive things. I think SQL database is the only PaaS database service in the world that has this feature, really. So
How have we seen and what kind of feedback have we heard from that from during public
view? It's I'll tell you they're at least 4 or 5 customers who when we reached out to them and they realized that they're sort of using it in preview. I can tell you they're the customers for life because for them when there was a real attack and then we alerted and we were able to stop it. I mean, that kind of builds up a relationship that's, it's more than, at that point, it's the trust sort of suddenly goes up.
Yeah, and that's a trust thing. These are one of those things where, this is now enterprise
correct.
Type of things, and build, like you say, both.
So we had, customers, and, we've sort of tweeted about this, where people have come out and said that this is like a, we've sort of written a blog about this as well, where customers have come and said, this is like a fundamental differentiator. This was the reason why they picked Azure as the platform, cloud platform to sort of go with, right?
Yeah.
So that's... that's actually
there's probably a handful of those that were like, yep, Azure specific, that this is the reason we're going with that platform.
Correct.
All right, Alex asks, feature parity between standard and enterprise was a great move. Will we see this for BI tools as well, SaaS, and analysis services and integration services?
So from a principal standpoint, we are moving towards across all editions of SQL Server, not just with RDBMS, but even with BI, et cetera. The programmability feature set needs to remain the same.
Yeah.
Now, there are gaps in BI and SSIS that exist today because our focus for SP1 was effectively the core engine that we went with. Please let me know as a principal that we have established. If there are aspects where you believe, hey, the principal is being violated, I'd love to hear that. I know the BI team is also focused very, very heavily on making sure that the developer experience across all editions is very consistent.
Yeah, the coding across editions was, what was it called? The programmability across editions
correct.
Was a huge,
that was a huge,
huge deal,
move.
Right?
Yeah.
And have we seen, good feedback from that?
We see that in ISV engagement that we're sort of going with. I mean,
absolutely.
You see that all the time.
It's like an applause from over
It's been, I mean, we see that in the numbers.
Yep.
Like we track what's called the, the developer funnel.
Yeah.
And which, there's Tony and team sort of track that very, very closely. And in that we see, big tech. In terms of the number of developers who are interested in the platform right now, and then we track even things like are they using it, are they heavily engaged by using one of the marquee features of SQL Server. So we track all those, and it's been pretty positive.
Yeah.
And which was again, it's not a surprise. I mean, because this was clearly in response to what the ISVs have always asked.
Oh, they've been asking for a long
correct.
Time, right? And I think there was a you could probably hear the applause from the moon. I think. From
correct.
The, right.
Correct. Yeah. So if there's inconsistencies that like Alex, if you've seen in BI and SSIS, let me know and I can follow up on that. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So let's wrap up. Because you mentioned SQL DW, and there was an awesome talk, I think, recently by Casey on just this the massive amounts of data they moved in just a short amount of time using Polybase, right?
Yeah, like a terabyte in 15 minutes.
Yeah, in 15 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And this was, as we talk about Polybase, I think this is in SQL, this is kind of a slow to get started type of scenario, but it's a big customer ask now. And when we see things like that, it's like, dang, right? Yeah. What was
it? So it's interesting, right? First of all, we should be super clear, like Polybase is really for accessing, it's sort of like the foundation for data virtualization where, you declare an external table against HDFS and you're able to sort of use that data and create as a relational table. Now, it so happens that the implementation of Polybase architecturally leverages the fact that, SQL DW has, multiple compute nodes in parallel where you can sort of, pull in data. So we've actually built a data loading experience in SQL DW using like underlying technology, and it gets misused. I mean, it's not like Polybase is for data loading, but it's the underpinnings of Polybase sort of enable faster data loading in parallel. And I think Casey's written a blog about this as well, where I think we've demonstrated about a terabyte in 15 minutes. That's about like 1.2 gigabytes per second.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty phenomenal.
That's significant.
And that team, and you'll hear more about, we'll talk more about SQL DW. I think the team is sort of doing some great work in a few months towards June-ish timeframe where you'll see some foundational changes coming in performance and scale and really expanding not just the size, but like, the benchmarks that we look at with TPCH and things like that in a meaningful way.
How do we encourage, because we see this SQL and big data technology sort of coming together, right? Mm-hmm. How do we get people excited, more excited about that? Because, when we see things like that, that's a great way to start getting people excited about it, right? Especially, those are in the SQL DW area, but... when we said, "Hey, Polybase is in SQL," how do we get people to really start thinking down that path?
Yeah, I think the mental model essentially is very simple. There will not be a single store that'll have all your data.
Yeah,
I mean it's just a lot of stores tried to be that. We were trying that with SQL back in like mid 2000s, right?
Yeah,
and the reality is it's just not a practical way to think about the world. Yeah. Where, all your data is going to come into a single silo. So if that assumption is valid, then data virtualization becomes very critical.
Like
I should be able to access. And that's where Polybase sort of comes in. Like we recently released with SQL DW, you can now connect to data that's stored in ADLS.
Yep.
Like Azure Data Lake store through Polybase and create external tables. And that's huge because ADLS is our marquee storage service where a lot of the data that's on which you need to do big data analysis is going to come and land. And being able to sort of do interactive queries using SQL DW is huge, right? And you're going to keep pushing boundaries like that. So that's really the mental model, right? Which is how do you solve for, SQL becoming like the front of all your data stores?
Yeah, of all your data store, right? And
right.
I think you said it very well. It's like this, how do we become that front of?
Correct.
Because we need to start thinking that. Our data is just not relational, and we have data in other places, but we have one way to get to all that data.
Correct.
Right. Especially when we start thinking Azure Data Lake and Azure Data Lake Store, phenomenal area to start thinking about that.
Absolutely.
All right. So when shall we see? Okay, Nico, I think you're asking a dangerous question here. When shall we see the parity with the programming features in Azure SQL Database?
So first of all, I'd say it is interesting that, Nico, thanks for the question again. You're always fun.
Yeah,
but
we know where you live, by the way.
So SQL, like MSIT did this analysis, right? They looked at, all the databases. They have like tens of thousands of databases running SQL. Yeah. And using the bunch of migration tools that they've built, and about 53% of their databases and applications could move as is to SQL DB.
Yeah.
Right? So there was not. Now, of course, there's some friction because, we expose the database burst model. So, without revealing too much, what I will say is it's a known issue. And in fact, as more and more customers are trying to do this lift and shift with no app changes, that we believe is a very critical area for us to go address any gaps.
Well, when we say programmability features, I mean, it's fairly...
It's fairly consistent today.
Yeah, consistent. So, when he says, I'm thinking, when I saw that question, I'm like, well, we're pretty close, aren't we?
From a developer programming surface area at a database level, absolutely. It's actually the same. I think maybe there's file stream, file table, which are like dependent on NTFS being there. I think there's certain things like that. There's, of course... then you take a look at things like three-part names and, know, and we're working on all of that, just to be sort of very clear. But there's another approach we're looking at where you fundamentally change the game in a more substantial way with
okay.
SQL database.
Yeah, and
I won't reveal much about it.
But stay tuned.
I can tell you the team is working very hard on that.
All right, last question, we'll wrap up with this. What's being done to help data developers to test data apps? Testing tools in SQL is years behind the .NET devs.
It's, obviously we have some of the partners you know, who work on, you know, giving tools for things like continuous integration and deployment. Again, from a tooling standpoint, once we are past, you know, what we're doing for SQL Server VNext, where the focus like is very squarely on command line and the things like we said, you know, this is an area that's coming up in Azure too in a big way. Just because the rate of change on SQL apps, things like schema, et cetera, is much faster than what used to happen on-prem. And, you know, it's a fair point, which is this is showing up as more of a gap. So we are, you know, actively working with some of our partners, with the Visual Studio team, to figure out how to make this experience end-to-end much better.
And I think the tooling area is a great, is a focus area.
But again, I mean, if there's specific scenarios, you know, absolutely, Alex. Whoever asked that question, I forget.
It was Simon, I think.
Simon, just, you know, please let me know if there's specific scenarios and we can connect.
I think it's a priority thing, right? This whole on the VNext, this is huge, right? And so at that point, let's, you know, with the focus on that, and then
right now, if you take a look at the tooling team, is squarely focused on ensuring the multi-plat, cross-plat experience is awesome.
Yeah, because without that, you know, we're not.
That's like step zero, and then
All right, we are out of time, but great questions. Thanks for watching. We will see you in March. Rohan, thanks for coming. It was a pleasure,
thank you,
as
Scott,
always.
And thank everyone.
Good questions. If you got a question, tweet them to @SQLUnplugged. We'll get to them next time. Otherwise, we will see you in March.
Great. Take care. Thanks, guys.